to the Granite Fitness Podcast. This week we have on Helena based trainer Polly Campbell. Polly, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Ryan. It's been I wanted to go elk hunting, but I figured I better follow through on this commitment with you to have a conversation.
We'll try and make it quick.
It's all good. It's all good. I have family in town anyway, so.
Oh, perfect. So yeah, so Polly's based out of Helena, and you own a gym over there called The Bar. Now, how many years have you guys been open now?
Oh gosh, this is going on like 4 years, I believe.
It's crazy because I've known you the whole time, and it just doesn't seem to me like it's been that long. That's insane. I guess you guys opened like right during COVID, I guess. So,
yeah, there was a need for gyms, and there's a way to scoot under the regulations and stuff they were trying to enforce, and so we just made it by appointment only to make it happen. And it's interesting because I've had a lot of my clientele have been with me for years. Every week, somebody will come in and be like, "Gosh, how long have you been here?" And we just kind of talk about how it started, sharing half the space to then taking over a little more and more and more now with the expansion. So a lot of cool things coming down the pike here, which will be interesting in the next year or two, I think.
Which really ironic enough, I mean, that's, I think a lot of gym owners get wrong is they want to start 100% from the get-go. And it's like such a smarter move to start with less than you need and then just gradually add a little more and a little more.
Yeah. And in fact, so when I was in undergrad school, a mentor of mine, Paul Keenan, he owns Riverside Athletic Club, which is just north of my hometown, Wausau, Wisconsin, about 20 minutes. And he was kind of telling me his story about how he started. And he basically had a garage when he started. Mm-hmm. And I remember he was telling me about, like, he really didn't have memberships, but a husband and wife couple came in and they said they wanted to join. And he's like, that just kind of like started the spark to the fire. And now it's this huge facility in Merrill, Wisconsin. And so, yes, to what you were saying, it's, I think it can be a bit ambitious, especially if you don't have a name or a reputation in a community that you're, embedded in. Just to go and open a gym, I think can be really, really challenging. And I'm going to say impossible, especially if you don't have a reputation behind you. People don't know you in the community, you haven't got out. And so, yeah, it's been a blessing. There's been a lot of headaches, but for the most part, it's been, headaches or not, it's been a blessing. And I have a tremendous amount of gratitude for what's transpired.
I'm going to change the order of my questions a bit here, just with what we're already talking about. So what is it that you feel that The Bar brings to the Helena market that is unique?
I think the first thing is environment. I think the value of the environment is important that you, and I don't want this to sound like the other gyms in the area suck, because they don't. Like, they all have a place, right?
I mean, you worked at some of the other gyms in the area, so yeah.
Yeah, the one I work for, after I opened my facility, it closed down. I think I did a big, market analysis, and, I've been either a member or tried a day pass or week pass. We moved to Helena 10 years ago. And so I kind of had, what the fabric of the gym culture looked like in the area. We have everything from, small independent owners up to Planet Fitness and then YMCAs and things in between. Hospital organizations associated with their health club. And when you walk in, when you walk into each one of these places, you kind of can get a sense for who they cater to, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And that's not good, bad, or indifferent. It's just, it's the environment, right? And so I think our environment is probably is the number one thing that people comment on. So I'm a retired professional bodybuilder. Ryan, you've been my coach for multiple years here. And I think the important thing for people to recognize is creating an environment that invites all walks of life, regardless of what their goal is, whether it's for mental health for that day, whether they're training for, ultra runs or bodybuilding competition. Because you don't want, the worst thing I think people can do is get a rap for being like the meathead gym. Right. Yep. Because generally meatheads don't spend a lot of money. The people that spend money are, probably, I'll say, the boomer population. They have a lot of disposable income. And so really catering an environment that is kick ass. We just had two huge murals painted on the wall. We added 1800 square feet with a physical therapist. We have five coaches and a physical therapist. So to further add to that question you asked, what's really unique about our facility that others, you know, don't really have, I think, is the value we add. You know, if I'm working with a client, I can refer them right to the physical therapist. And now the physical therapist is cash based, out of pocket. So the benefit there is you get better in less visits because you're spending an entire hour with Dr. Cody. Yeah. Versus going in, seeing a vet tech, or, you know, which would be similar to a PA essentially. I wouldn't even give them that much credit. And then, you know, you work with a physical therapist for maybe 15 minutes or out the door, but you see them more frequently and for more sessions, which can impact obviously scheduling, vacation for work, if you don't get time off, all of those things. And you really get to know Cody. You get his, you know, you get a cell phone number, you get to communicate with him. He's done free screening. So I think we're not quite to where I want to be in terms of all comprehensive, but we're a one-stop shop, and we're continuing to evolve in that capacity.
Well, like you said, I mean, just a couple of years ago, you guys were half of a facility and it was just you essentially, because when you started, it was just you and your wife that were doing the training, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. And so now, I mean, expanding to that is really quick timeline if you look at it from a broad perspective.
Yeah. I mean, it flew by so fast, and just kind of looking back on, you know, when my buddy Andrew decided to leave, you know, he wanted to be closer to home. He had like a 45-minute drive. Mm-hmm. I actually got really nervous about it and anxious, because I'm like, you know, I went from, I guess without the office, probably like 1,200 square feet of gym space to 3,000 square feet of gym space, or 2,800 or whatever it is, you know, minus the office and the two restrooms now. Well, now it's 5,000 square feet. So, but that's just like a big burden to take on, right? So it's like, for those of you listening, if you're scared of risks, you know, I've always done really well responding to getting thrown in the shark tank. And that was me getting thrown into the shark tank. Either I dissolve my gym and go to work for somebody else, which I did not want to do, or I get creative about, okay, how can I maybe expand this? And so, you know, I kind of leaned into that, that unknown territory, and it's worked out really well.
I mean, that's kind of how you've approached your recent switch to running.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's like, hey, I decided I'm going to do an ultra run, and let's get going on it.
Whoa, not ultra, half marathon.
I mean, but it seems like, I mean, ultra's coming. That's like,
yeah,
it's coming.
Yeah, I think so. And we could talk about that a little bit. I don't want this to be entirely about me and my personal goals, but I know you have questions, so I'll answer whatever questions you'd like.
Yeah. Yeah, our main focus today we were going to talk about was training athletes, since that is, again, one of the things I really like about your gym. Like you said, you do have kind of the meathead side. You've also got the older adult side, but then you've also got a really big program focus on training athletes, both some one-on-one and then it looks like small group as well.
Yep.
I guess, where did you, because I know you played rugby growing up as well. So what really got you into interest in training athletes?
Essentially, that was a need in the market. After doing a market analysis, and this doesn't mean like athletes in the area don't go to different gyms and train, they do, but there's nobody really providing a service specifically for athletic needs outside of the school setting,
which is crazy for a school, for a city the size of Helena.
I know. And Helena's not that big.
Billings has like eight of them, I feel like.
Yeah. Well, you guys are significantly larger, I think, in population, but you know, with the amount of school systems we have in, you know, the Helena and the surrounding areas, my gym's in Montana City. So there's, you know, there's, I think, three schools within like less than 5 minutes from my place. And so, you know, I kind of promoted, like most everybody didn't really know I played Division I rugby in undergraduate school. And we had a very successful rugby team. We played at the Big Ten. We played at the Sweet 16 in Purdue. We had, you know, for a walk-on Division I rugby team, we had a stellar program. And so I was, you know, I honestly, I don't really like, I have a few clients that are like contest prep athletes. I'm going to say I really don't enjoy contest prep. I've retired. I've done all that. And it's not that it doesn't really, it's not that it's not fun. It just doesn't interest me as much anymore.
Yeah. I was just saying, for the audiences that aren't aware of that. So contest prep, meaning bodybuilders.
Correct. Yeah. Physique athletes, essentially. Yeah. Getting ultra lean for a very short period of time. Yeah. And so, you know, I remember when I was growing up with athletics, you know, we didn't really have, until maybe my junior and senior year when I was on, you know, Alpine ski team, I didn't really play any other sports long-term in high school. I was really small in football. I didn't take an interest in weightlifting. So I wasn't strong. I wasn't big. I was like 160 pounds when I graduated high school. I'm like, you know, it would be great to give back to kids in the community that could benefit from what I didn't have growing up to make them better, right? And there's obviously with kids, there's this component of going through puberty, right? Mm-hmm. And so you can, you know, a kid that hasn't gone through puberty, you can have them lift weights as much as possible. It's going to benefit them. Mm-hmm. But until they hit that puberty stage, that's where you're going to see them grow in other aspects, right? Bigger muscles, their joints mm-hmm. change, their segments change, things like that. They're better with their feet, better with their hand-eye coordination. And girls in particular, they go through puberty quicker than males do. So you see that accelerated mm-hmm. in the female population. And then there was all this red tape to break through, like, oh, it's going to stunt my child's growth. So what we did with, I had Danny and Noah, two physical therapists that were outstanding. Nikki and I love them dearly, and they're doing traveling physical therapy work now. Mm-hmm. I couldn't have done this program without them. We did a meet and greet with the trainers and the parents. And so we had mm-hmm. probably about, I'd say 30 parents show up to the gym one night. And we did a very brief 20-minute presentation about misconceptions about strength training and youth and sports conditioning and all these things. We answered questions. We got to know the parents. And my objective mm-hmm. was not to, I don't want 50 kids in my facility. That's a, you know, again, my facility is geared around toward like the, I'll say the bougie posh high end semi-private, right? Yeah. I don't want to be.
Your quality over quantity.
Correct. Exactly. You get 12, 15 kids in one class. There's no way you have all eyes on all of those children. Mm-hmm. And that would be an absolute nightmare to try to be like herding cats. If you've ever seen Kindergarten Cop, that's exactly what it would be like. And I do love kids, but it would just, I think, devalue the service a little bit more. And yep. So I'm not the cheapest in town. I'm proud of it. We're worth it. And the kids that show up consistently see the results and their parents see the results. And I continually get updates from parents. And the cool part about that is there's not really a lot of automation with my business. It's when you're getting messages from me, you're getting messages from me. It's not the scheduled system, which again, those can be beneficial in certain capacities, but you know, I like to, again, the value added, right? If you're getting a text about how your athlete played on Saturday at a soccer game, you're getting the text from me and not a computer automation. Like I really want to know what's happening.
So yeah, you're charging more because it allows you to have a number of athletes where you can still provide that service. Right? You said, yeah, if you have 50 athletes, there's just no way you can stay on top of that as one person. That's just
right. Right. And yeah. And then there's a whole other slew of issues that, you know, challenges that we would face that would be different from the challenges I faced, you know, kind of getting that, the current strength and conditioning program going from the ground up. So one of my biggest challenges is getting through to high school coaches. Training their athletes. And there's a lot of different things we could talk about today. We don't have time to touch all of them, but simple things from, you know, I've seen programming from the athletes that show me the programming that's been written for them for the summer.
A little scary.
It's like, who wrote this? Like, no wonder you guys are undersized. Like, this makes zero sense to me. Like if that, you know what I mean? Like we've been doing this long enough and I understand that high school athletics, they have a lot of volunteers and things like that, which is wonderful because we need those.
It is well-intentioned. It's just not always well thought out.
Correct. And so I think what I'm going to do this year is I'm going to go talk to a couple of football coaches, say, hey, I'm going to put together, if you're interested, a free 1 month training block for your athletes. And one day a week on Friday, I'll train them for free at my gym. It'll be limited to 6 or 8 athletes to see if they like it.
I love that idea.
The one thing I can say is the athletes that have trained with me consistently, they get bigger, they get faster, they get stronger, and they learn more about nutrition and recovery.
Oh, yeah, all the kids you post on Instagram are monsters.
Yeah, it's been amazing. I think one of my first athletes was Tavin McMaster.
Yep. I was like watching him.
He's an offensive lineman, and I've been training him since I've almost been open in the new facility. He started at like 220 pounds and he's 6'3", 6'4". He might be taller, but he's eye level with me, if not a bit above. And now he's playing at Carroll and he's 300 pounds and he's awesome. So fast and freakishly strong. And it's
the stuff you post too, like like he's strong on squat and bench and deadlift and stuff, but then you post like, you know, he's doing rotational stuff. He's doing single leg stuff. Like he's not just this, like, I'm good at these three things in a box. Like he can do a lot of cool stuff.
Right. And that's really, kind of, I really like working with athletes and the athletic population, because it opens my Pandora box of opportunity and possibility when it comes to training. So I'll say we can kind of do some novelty stuff that still has transfer and application to the field or the ice. I train Brooklyn Pankos. I love Brooklyn so much. She's been one of my originals also. She plays Division I hockey out east. She's an amazing athlete. She was on SportsCenter last year. Awesome. And, you know, she comes back and she trains with me, whether it's on Thanksgiving, Christmas, summer, and we constantly are making progress. This doesn't mean kids don't have, you know, hiccups and setbacks. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of ego involved with high school athletics. And it's, you know, my intention is, yes, I do want to make money. That's why I'm in business, is to make money. But I'm also in business to help your program improve their ability to perform. And how do you do that? You know, there's got to be some level of autonomy between, you know, getting personalized service and the sporting program at a particular high school.
You can even just see how much you care with your social media for, like, I feel like, especially in the fall, like it seems like every Friday or something, you're at a different football game for one of your athletes. Like that's not a, you know, that's not a service that everyone does, like showing up and showing that you actually care like that, that you're still going to come watch them. It's not just like when you're paying me here in the gym.
Right. And like, and I have conflict about that internally. Mm-hmm. Like I wanted to go hunting tonight, but I made a commitment last week to three of my boys that are playing at Helena High tonight that I'll be there. Mm-hmm. And that's
the same Helena High that just lost to Billings West.
Yes. Yes. You know, that's part of my responsibility, and parents see me show up and they're very, you know, I don't expect anything out of it other than, you know, I want to, you know, I make it known I'm there. I watch from the sideline, you know, I give feedback. I send my athletes text game day, you know, you know, inspirational things or things about getting your mental attitude right. And each player responds differently to a different message, right? So they're all not getting the same canned message. It's very personable. And
it can literally even help you as a coach in your programming, because you can see like, oh man, so-and-so's, you know, not as explosive as I thought, you know, or like little things like that. You're like, okay, we need to maybe do a little bit more of this, or like, oh, he seems like he's favoring this hip. Like maybe we need to be hitting something there. Like there's a ton you can get out of it just from a coaching perspective as well. Or even I've had that with clients where like, if I wasn't that familiar with their sport, like going and watch them compete in something is a good way to be like, oh, well, I see we need to, you know, we need to work on rotational strength, or we need to work on lower body power or whatever. Like just watching them compete in sport does a ton for the coach as well.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, one of the struggles that I've had, you know, I remember when I played rugby in college, it was very difficult to keep weight on. And that's magnified even more so when you're in high school and you're a multi-sport athlete. Mm-hmm. And so providing some nutritional guidance has been very important. It's been critical, and it's been very beneficial for all of my athletes that I'm working with. I think one of the biggest challenges, and this message is to go out to parents, and I say this with empathy and love, is that your kids don't have to be involved in absolutely everything. I think there's kind of a psychological component there that, you know, they always have to be doing something. If your kid is, you know, I think it's, and I can say this, I don't have kids, but I was an athlete. I was a multi-sport athlete. I know how it is. Yeah. My parents were always supportive of me. If I started a sport, I had to finish the season. I could never quit. That was very important. And that was very, very well communicated in the beginning, you know, but what ends up happening is it's very similar to, like, I asked my coach one year, when I was doing one of my pro shows, I'm like, hey, I needed to train for the Grand Teton because I was going to summit that with Nikki, and I did. And then I had a pro show to compete at. And he's like, well, generally, if you train for both, one or both are going to suffer. So I didn't train for the Grand Teton until after my last show. So I had like 3 or 4 weeks, right? And that was very beneficial to me. So the same thing kind of applies to youth athletes, is like, if there's a sport you really like, give 100% to that sport. It doesn't mean you have to be in multiple sports, right? Because now you run into the issue of, are you able to strength train? Because you athletes, and hear me parents, hear me coaches, hear me athletes, if you are in a sport, you need to train in season. If you take mm-hmm. in season off, you are essentially reducing your ability to improve your athletic performance into that season and the next season. So you're always a year behind if you do that.
Well, and Randall and I talked about this on podcast before. It's like, it doesn't mean that you continue the same level of volume. Like right. you will cut some volume when you're in season, but it's like, you don't just go to zero. Like it's not just practicing games. Like you still need to be hitting some level of strength training.
Right. The maintenance phase, right? It's the same thing mm-hmm. that, you know, you do with athletes that are in race season. It's like, well, you know, as your mileage increases, you know, we'll kind of look and adjust your volume and intensity accordingly. The same mm-hmm. thing needs to happen. And then as far as, you know, nutrition and recovery, I think recovery is the biggest thing that athletes struggle with. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is, you know, you get, it's educating the parents, right? So mm-hmm. having conversations with them about, you know, what's appropriate, what may not be appropriate. And when you're young and you're in a sport, one or two or more, in a particular, I'll say quarter or portion of a year, you know, you're not going to be able to eat all the vegetables and all the fruits. Like those are very important. Those are the foundation, but you're going to mm-hmm. need pizza. You're going to need Pop-Tarts. You're going to need high calorie.
Get some calories in.
Sources of energy because the demands you're placing on your body are going to require the energy.
Well, especially like you said, like the kids who are like either like struggling to keep the weight on or like ones who are actually trying to gain weight. It's like if you're like a 150 pound like junior in high school, it's like you can just eat whatever you want. I mean, like you actually probably need to eat more than you think you need to eat to actually yeah. just be able to maintain if you're in a full season sport. Mm-hmm.
I've been a nutrition coach for a very long time. And most of my clientele, we track macronutrients, right? That's totally not necessary. That's, I would say for 99% of my athlete population in high school or junior high or even younger, that's not an appropriate task
for
adolescents to be taking. So mm-hmm. if athletes are looking to increase their body weight, the only change we talk about is adding a high calorie protein shake at the end of the day before bed, right? Because that's mm-hmm. measurable. It's easy. They don't have to think about it. And that's a conversation mm-hmm. to have with their parents to ensure that they're following through. So, you know, they're using whole milk or a milk substitute if they're lactose intolerant, peanut butter or some butter if there's any allergies there, a scoop of whey protein powder, which is not a steroid and it's completely safe for your kids, just as creatine is. And if your kids aren't taking creatine monohydrate, parents, that's like not taking your employer's 401k match. Okay. It's silly. You need to go out and buy it now, a regular monohydrate. So those simple changes, right? Easy to evaluate. Let's start here. Do this every single day before you go to bed or an hour before you go to bed. And let's measure it in 4 weeks. And it never fails. Kids are up in weight.
Yep.
And they feel better, right? Because they're getting more food in throughout the day. Mm-hmm. So it kind of helps on all fronts. And the multi-sport athletes are really difficult to have gain weight. It's just, it's a full-time job. Like you have to eat when you're not even hungry, essentially.
Dan John has a great chapter on that, one of his books, how with his athletes, it's like they need to eat a breakfast, a lunch, and a snack before they're even allowed to do their afternoon workout. It's like, if you come to me and you haven't had those three things, he's like, you're just going home. Like, I don't want you in the weight room. Like you're not going to have the full energy you need after a full day of school. Like at that age, like you need to have a couple thousand calories in before you're lifting.
Yep. 100%. And that's one of the first things I ask, you know, when athletes come in, I ask, what did you do today? What do you have coming up later today? And are you training tomorrow? Like, I want to know in that short window, because that's going to influence what we do for the day, whether it's intensity, mm-hmm. volume, et cetera.
Well, it's a great example of like, say how the best programs are written in pencil, not pen. It's like, you can have the greatest program, but it's like, if coach made them run 15 extra gassers yesterday, it's like, you're not going to do the same thing that you had planned had they not been doing that.
Well, and that's a message that I'd like to get out to coaches. If your kids are mm-hmm. constantly run into the ground, it's like the best finisher you always hear, you know, or see videos posting about the best finisher for after a workout for athletes, mm-hmm. go home. Go yep. home, get some food, get some rest. That is the best finisher yep. you could provide, you know, yep. because let's face it. I know the high school coaches and the junior high coaches. I know you're working your kids. You demand a lot of them, as you should. That's your job. But just arbitrarily throwing in stupid shit at the end of a practice because you're in a position of making those demands is absolutely silly.
Yeah. And like, well, that's what we did when I was their age. It's like, okay.
Yeah, 40 years ago.
You also drove a stick shift back then, but
and you were 40 pounds lighter and you know, weren't taking 10 milligrams of lisinopril to lower your blood pressure. So it's like, just let your kids go home and rest. Like most athletes would benefit from that when they have an opportunity to recover.
Well, you said, especially in this era now where like these kids have like practices till 8, 9 o'clock at night, like they need to just go home and rest at a certain point.
Cause then you got homework, you got other family obligations, mm-hmm. you know, they want to go out and hang out with their friends. Like they need to have a social life too. So there's no magic formula here, but I do think these are things that, you know, programs need to take into consideration. And for the most part, I would say high school coaches have been very supportive of their athletes getting specific attention with a trainer. And I think they need to be, you know, let's face it. If I walked into a handful of gyms in the area or high schools during their summer program, the coach isn't even present. So how do you know your athletes are doing something right? Or they're on their phone, or they're in their office doing something else. Yep. They're not present with their kids. They're not coaching their kids. They're not firing them up.
I could be wrong, but I thought like in the summer, they're not even allowed like contact hours. Like they can essentially have like not required practices, but I don't think they can actually be present for that.
I'm just saying like general lifting, and maybe there are some constraints there. I can watch kids move on the field, and I can tell if they're doing things right in the weight room just based on how they move, you know, and so that's kind of a tough position to be in. You know, I headbutted some coaches last year, and I'll tell this story. I won't use names or schools or anything. That's not important, but I had like three athletes come in, their calves were smoked for like 10 days. Like it lapsed. And I was asking them, you know, what are you guys doing? Well, our coach made us do calf raises. And essentially what it was is I think they used the bleachers or the stadium, and for whatever step they were on, that corresponding step, whether it was step one or 10, they had to do that many calf raises. And I don't know if it was single or double. And these kids came back and they were just wrecked. And it's like, that's not the goal, right?
No, exactly.
And most of these kids throughout the summer aren't lifting. They're going to hang out with their buddies in the gym.
Yep.
Right. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think there's camaraderie, there's teamwork, there's team building and things like that. But I was a kid in high school, when you're in the weight room, we were in the weight room for ski team for a very short period of time. The attention span of high school athletes is, let's just be honest, it's not like a bodybuilding mentality. It doesn't necessarily need to be that. But, you know, there could be some areas for improvement across the board. And I think coaches, absolutely, I don't care if you use me or not, or whatever community you're in, I would encourage you to, you know, send your athlete to get more specific help if they need it or if they're interested in it.
Well, it's like we don't tell the coaches what plays they should be wearing, but coaches also then are not gonna be the experts on like what exercises their students need to be doing. Like it's different hats for different folks.
Right. They don't have a degree in, you know, biomechanics and, you know, anatomy, and, you know, they're I'll say blue collar workers for the most part. And they've got,
I mean, honestly, it's really no different, again, not to step on toes, but a lot of doctors in the same situation who then act like they are exercise scientists. Again, it's like they understand the medical realm, but it's like, sorry, you don't squat, you don't run, you don't do these things. Like, I don't think you have a full understanding of what this actually is.
Right. Which is unfortunate. And the same with the nutrition space with doctors. They take one intro to nutrition class. I mean, their time and energy is spent in, you know, other areas. And that's not to discredit them, because that's what they're going to school for.
Yep.
But, you know, it's like, if an athlete has an injury or something and they come to the gym and like, hey, my shoulder's really messed up. I can't diagnose that. I don't even want to try to diagnose it. Yep, like,
exactly.
I probably could, but like, that's out of my lane. Go see Dr. Cody. He'll get you back in business as soon as possible. You know, I don't want to sit here and guess. That's outside of my scope of practice. We can work in conjunction. I can have a conversation with him. We can titrate you off some things and transition you back, whatever we need to do. But go see that person that specializes in that area to help you get back to all cylinders firing.
So that actually perfectly leads me into my last two questions or categories I had for you. One, I wanted to look at, we're going to talk knee health and shoulder health. I don't care which one we start with. But so since I have knee health on the board first, what are some areas of focus you look at for keeping your athlete's knees healthy? Like whether that's from a programming perspective, or like what muscles are you specifically targeting, or exercises you're trying to ensure you get in? Like any number of areas there.
So for, we'll start with, I'll say knee and hip both, because they can go hand in hand, even ankle, but yep. We'll just say knee. And this can go for shoulders too, is isometrics.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We yep. talked about the,
it's the first level.
Yeah. The juice is worth the squeeze, especially like, you know, transitioning to in season and in season, or mm-hmm. it doesn't really matter. You could apply them anywhere throughout the year with an athlete, but you know, if you're going to start with, you know, 2-a-days leading into football season, simply doing isometrics to get the joints ready for the task at hand. I mean, I've got a library list of exercises, but
I guess patterns, maybe more specifically,
like movement patterns. Well, I like heel floating exercises, right? So like a split lunge, right? With mm-hmm. with like the front, like essentially the ball of your foot forward on the plate. And then the rest of your foot is off of the plate, mm-hmm. horizontal with the ground. You know, the heel isn't dipping. It's not elevated up. It's completely horizontal, like it would be on the floor, and holding mm-hmm. that for, you know, 15, 20 seconds or so, maybe 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. And then graduating, you know, that into some contrast work. Maybe you superset that with like, maybe a sled push or a hamstring or something of that nature, right? Mm-hmm. To kind of get those segments ready for the task during that training session, but also the season. Because I think if we look at the landscape of what athletes do throughout the summer, I mean, they're hanging out with their buddies, they're doing stuff, they're active, but they're probably not lifting as much as they are in season. So mm-hmm. So imagine going from, like, I'll say cold turkey beginning of the season, kids are excited for summer. You know, for the first month, they really don't give a shit about anything other than hanging out with their friends. And now we're closing in on, you know, less than a month before football starts, and now we're doing 2-a-days. Yeah, they're young,
mm-hmm.
but they still get injured.
Yep.
Right. So essentially circling back around to, you know, different movement patterns, that would be a movement pattern. You know, I really like, this isn't really necessary. Well, it could be like tempo work. I know we do a lot of tempo work as well.
Mm-hmm.
I like a posterior pull banded RDL with a pause or a tempo. Mm-hmm. That seems to work really, really well, because I do think sometimes athletes need to learn the foundations again of certain movements mm-hmm. as they transition back, getting ready for the season. For shoulders, one of my favorite warmups is to throw an athlete on the bike or the rower, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, if they're already involved in season, or they've been lifting for a while, I'll start the session with a couple intervals. Mm-hmm. And I mean like 2 to 3, 10 to 15 second max effort bouts. We're not doing this for the whole hour. Same mm-hmm. thing on the rower. Maybe it's a 500 meter all out row. You know, both of those are kind of full body workouts, gets the body primed for what we're going to be doing. Mm-hmm. For shoulder work, I like to use a lot of bands.
Mm-hmm.
I generally, for athletes, if you think about the nature of, I'll use football or even basketball and volleyball, there's a lot of overhead extension with arms, right? Mm-hmm. Or there's a lot of pressing in front of your like a bench press, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so those muscles are obviously going to get, I'll say, I don't want to say overused, but they're going to be the primary muscles used in season, right?
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of what position you're playing, whether you're throwing the football, or whether you're the O-line or safety, like your overhead extension or your pressing, those two movements. And so what's really vulnerable? A weak shoulder. Yep. And so how do we protect that? Well, again, isometrics, tempo work, things like tempo lateral raises. We could do negative push-ups. Mm-hmm. We could hold, you know, the bottom end of a push-up, you know, for 10, 15 seconds. But then let's also not forget, you know, the posterior side. So having a really strong backside, especially in season, because those muscles don't get trained a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if you look at some of the defensive moves with football players, they're not using a ton of back muscles, unless of course they're doing like a swim move or something like that. Again, another very vulnerable position for your shoulder to be in.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're getting hit from both sides or whatever the case might be. One of my athletes, I'm not going to use his name, he had rotator cuff surgery last year and recovered very quickly. He's a highly, highly skilled golfer, and he's a very highly skilled football player.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was actually training him this morning. He has a game up in Malta today. And I was asking him, how's your shoulder? He's like, it's just kind of tired. And I'm like, you know, that, you know, we talk about the pain scale and where it's at. He's like, it's not really pain, it's just tired. And I'm like, you know, that's probably, it's for a variety of reasons, you know, he had surgery on it. So it's obviously, it's going to be weaker. There's nothing you can do about that other than strength training. Mm-hmm. But I said, it's early season, so the demands you're putting on it right now are probably not what it's used to, especially mm-hmm. since this is the first season you're experiencing post-surgery. So I said, we'll just continue to monitor it. We did a ton of shoulder mobility work today. I shouldn't say a ton. We did a couple sets of different things. We did some rotational work. Exactly. Yeah, because he's got, you know, a 6-hour freaking bus ride up to Malta to play, and then they're coming back, I think, late tonight.
Oof, yikes.
So I wanted to make sure we get his body moving, you know, make sure there weren't any issues. He had some calf tightness on one side. So, you know, we did some isometrics there as well. We used the Arsenal strength squat machine, and we just did some, we did like a 3-second hold at the top with a, you know, a 3-second eccentric essentially. Mm-hmm. And really low volume, right? So like in season, we're not doing a ton of weight. Mm-hmm. We're not doing a ton of volume.
We're like priming almost.
Yeah. I think we were like 8 reps or less today on everything. It was like generally like that 4 to 8 rep range with what we were doing. Mm-hmm. We did some explosive work, you know, with minimal load, et cetera.
Yeah. And I guess one of the things that I wanted to tie in, just the common theme that I heard, listening from the training side, is like hammering so much. Again, we're talking tempo, we're talking isometrics. Really, what we're talking there is tendons. Like the muscles are super important.
Yep.
One of the things, especially the coaches never factor in. Again, this is why it's also kind of mean to say idiotic, but idiotic to just hammer these kids with, say, calf raises that quickly is, okay, yes, you're working the muscles and their muscles are maybe ready, but their tendons may not be. Tendons recover slowly. Tendons don't get the same blood flow. So like we need to get the tendons just as strong as we need to get the muscles, which like you and I were talking the other day about like really leading someone into a preseason with just a crap load of isometrics to get those tendons right. Cause that's where you tend to see most of the issues. You don't see a ton of like actually like, you know, burst muscles or something like that during a game. It's more like knee tendonitis, shoulder tendonitis, elbow tendonitis. It's like, well, how can we make strong tendons? Like you said, it's tempos, it's isos, it's like getting that stuff ready for the season, which is not the sexy stuff. Like, you know, no one worries about a big elbow tendon, but it's like we want to have strong, resilient tendons. And like you said, isometrics and eccentrics are where we're going to get that.
And you mentioned something, and I know we've talked about this before, is the blood flow. Like those are less vascular than our muscle tissue.
Yep.
And you have to think of it like a, you know, a car. You know, you get a, you know, you replace like a tie rod or something like that. You need to get your car realigned. And so think about your tendons and ligaments like that. You're kind of realigning your body for the task that you're going to be putting it through that season.
Yep.
And it's not sexy, but the cool part is you don't need to do that indefinitely. You can sprinkle in, you know, isometrics, you know, 2 or 3 isometric exercises.
Yep. Yeah. It doesn't have to be the whole program, but we just need to see something with it.
And I would speculate you'll probably see I don't want to say a ton, but you'll probably see a reduced risk of injury or experience less injuries with athletes.
Exactly. As I said, we can never totally prevent injuries, but we can create a more resilient tendon that is less susceptible.
Yeah.
One of the other things I thought that was underrated, you mentioned, is stuff like lateral raises. It's like, you know, no one looks at a lateral raise and like that doesn't seem sports specific to most people. It's like, well, when am I ever doing this? But as you mentioned in football, like say, if you are doing a swim move, stuff like that, where your shoulder's in a vulnerable position, we don't need to do 10 sets a week there, but we need to see at least a little bit there so that you've got some exposure and some stability built up in those ranges, because end ranges happen in sports. Like your shoulder is going to get yanked back. If you're a quarterback, at some point you're going to get hit in this position. And if we've never built any resilience there, like it's just more susceptible.
Yeah. And think of that segment, right? That lever arm that's coming up. So that quarterback's arm that's back, you get hit in the hand. The amount of torque that's placed on that shoulder is absolutely brutal.
I know.
And
honestly, every Sunday I see someone get hit like that. And I'm like, this just shows you how much more insanely like resilient those guys are. Cause I'm like, if you did that to me once, I'm just like, I cannot imagine.
I know,
and they're hitting that way like 3-4 times a game, like, ugh, at full speed. Just
and tendonitis and getting bursa sacs and stuff like that, the recovery time can almost be worse than a broken bone.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking
tendons take forever.
Months.
Yep.
Yeah, it's really bad. And so to get ahead of that curveball, I think it's important to do isometrics. And so I'm gonna toy around this year to see if I can get some more buy-in from some of the coaches and you know, just kind of experiment with different things. But the cool part is I know what I'm doing works because I get to test it with the athletes that I'm training.
Before we go, I want to make sure our audience knew where to find you. So where can they find you on social media?
Yeah. So I have to look up my tag on Instagram. So it's coach.pauly, and that's with IE. So it's coach.pauly_INC. Mm-hmm. And then on Facebook, it's just, I believe it's just Paul Campbell. Again, this is kind of one of the Campbell battles. Like soup. Yeah. I say that and some people still get it wrong. I'm not super active with my business stuff on Facebook. Again, this is one of the business struggles. It's like social media is one of the first things to go.
Yeah.
Because I used to post, you know, tons of videos, but now it's like, it's just a whole nother task list. And so
I do think there is sometimes a correlation, not entirely, because some are good at doing both, but there's sometimes a correlation between how much social media someone's putting out and how many like clients they actually have. Like there is a ratio there. Like at a certain point, yeah, if you're serving a certain amount of people, you just can't be posting 50 times a day. It just, there's no way.
Yeah. And it's crazy because I have like, I'll go through my Google Photos and I'll go to my video section and I have tons of videos, but I haven't posted them. And again, like people know me, people see, you know, the kids repost the stories that I share. So that gets that information out there. I do have to tell you a funny story before we depart here today. But so Tavin, the football player I was telling you about before, he was probably like 260, 270 at this time. This is probably a year and a half ago. We were doing a drill. It was a footwork drill, and then there was like a little bit of some upper body work involved. But essentially, the end result was I was the defender. I was coming up to him, and I was holding one of those big ass Swiss balls, kind of like in front of my, like up against my torso. And he kept hitting me, which was the objective at the end for blocking.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't hitting me. And I'm like, Tavin, hit me. Like, if you hit like this on the field, you're going to get manhandled. And so, and I don't think I have the video anymore, unfortunately. And so the last rep we did of this particular drill, he hit me so hard, I got launched back into the SquatMax machine and the garage door. And his eyes got real big. He's like, are you okay? I'm like, that's the intensity I'm talking about. Yeah. That's what I want you to do. You're not going to hurt me. I mean,
that's awesome.
I almost died. But yeah, I'm still here.
Worth it. It's memorable for him. And then where can people find your gym page as well on Instagram?
It's thebar406.com. And if you have any questions, you can just, there's like a little icon at the bottom. How can we help you? Just type it in there. I'll get notified. It goes to my cell phone. And if you're interested in getting your athlete in or, you know, anything, reach out. I'll answer your questions. I'll have a phone conversation with you.
Awesome.
Pretty cool.
Awesome. Thank you, Mr. Campbell.